what you want, tell me what you see, where you wanna go, what you wanna be. If you have a dream, you can make it there with a lot of work and a lot of prayer. If you take your time, gotta be precise, gotta have a plan, double check it twice. Wait, hold up, slow down, still gon' need advice. Someone's gone before, maybe talk to them. Then after you do, go and talk to him. Wait, it's gonna come, maybe not tonight. Take your time today, teach you looking right.
Got a lot of friends, made a lot of ends. Twitter, you the trend, him a Bentley Benz. But she moving kinda fast. Keep sweating, you gotta make it last. Live every day like it's your last. But don't forget to have a blast.
Welcome to Time Out. I am your host, Sylvia Crawley Milbury, and tonight I have a special show lined up for you today. I am so excited about my guest for tonight. I'm going to introduce her, and she has quite a resume, so I've only pulled out a few things, but my guest tonight solidifies her place among the legends of basketball in 2003, becoming the winningest active coach in women's basketball, and was chosen for induction into the Naismith Memorial Hall of Fame as a member of the class of 2013. This induction into the Naismith Hall of Fame cements her status as one of the greatest ever coaches in the women's game. Her career record is 908 to 321, which gives her more wins than any other active women's coach. With a 636 and 241 mark at Carolina, she also stands as one of only three coaches, along with Kay Yao and Debbie Ryan, to reach the 600 mark in the Atlantic Coast Conference schools. She was inducted into the Women's Basketball Hall of Fame in 2004. She has been named National Coach of the Year three times and led teams to at least 20 wins 29 times. She is also part of an exclusive club that features just one member, herself. She is the first and only coach to lead teams to national championships at the AIAW, NAIA, and NCAA levels. Those titles are the crown jewels in one of the most decorated college careers in women's basketball history. It is my honor to introduce to you Coach Sylvia Hatchell. Coach Hatchell, welcome, and thank you for being on the show tonight.
Thank you. It's an honor and a privilege. Anything I can do, anything for you, Coach. You sure made a difference in my life, and I just want you to know how proud I am of you and all your success and everything that you've done. But, you know, this is going to be fun for me because there's nothing I enjoy more than spending time with former players.
Speaking of spending time with former players, I understand that you are at Ivory Latta's shoot-around practice before one of her big games, and you also hired her as an assistant coach, and so I know you're there spending time with her, so I want to thank you for taking time out of your schedule to be with me today.
Well, that's no problem. Yeah, I'm watching them. They got shooting practice. They played tonight. They win the night. I think they pretty much got a playoff spot wrapped up, but it's Ivory Latta and Tierra Ruffin Pratt, who just finished playing for us last year. So this is a heaven on earth situation for me, watching these kids and talking to you and being here, in Springfield, and you know, just the whole thing that has happened this weekend with the Hall of Fame.
Right. I personally, Coach Hatchell, want to thank you for taking a chance on a little lanky kid from Steubenville, Ohio, and giving me a full scholarship to the University of North Carolina. I've had opportunity to thank you before, but I just want to thank you again because I can't tell you how much of a difference that made in my life.
I remember coming and watching you play, and you know, I just saw the potential that you had. You had so much potential, and I don't know if we've ever had a player that's improved as much as you have from when they came on campus until they finished and graduated. I just don't know anybody that's improved as much as you have. And you know, that was your hard work, and it was a joy. I mean, just the basketball, but just as a person, you know, they just don't get any better. And I just appreciate what you've done, you know, for the women's game, and then for the University of North Carolina, and for me personally as a coach.
Oh, well, thank you so much. I want to congratulate you on being named to the 2013 class for the Naismith Hall of Fame. Have you had time to really take it all in terms of what's happening right now?
Well, Sylvia, to be honest with you, every morning when I wake up, I open my eyes and I say to myself, has this really happened? Am I, you know, in the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame, you know, with all these great, you know, people? I mean, you know, the people that, you know, were there for the Hall of Fame induction. I mean, it was just a who's who. It's just unbelievable. I mean, I tell people, I told them all weekend, I said, you know, being inducted into the Naismith Hall of Fame is the next best thing to heaven. The only thing that's going to be better than this is heaven. And so, but it's just, again, it's a, for a basketball guru like me, it just doesn't get any better.
Right. And can you name some of the other people in the class? I know that Dawn Staley is a part of that class. I know that Rick Pitino from here in Louisville is a part of that class. Who are some of the other members that are in the class along with you?
Wow, you put me on the spot here. I mean, there's so many. Richie, let's see, I'm trying to think. Bernard King was with us. Russ Graniff.
I just looked it up. Gary Payton is on that
class.
Gary
was there. He's great, yeah. Bernard King, Dawn Staley, Rick Pitino,
Jerry Tarkin, what's his name, Tarkinson?
Yeah, Jerry Tarkanian, yeah. Jerry Tarkanian, he was a great
and
coach.
And Guy Lewis.
UNLV. Yeah, Guy Lewis, I mean, Houston, you know. I mean,
wow,
it's
what a
on
class.
And on. It's just been a who's who group in the class, but then all the former people there, and then Hubie Brown and Nancy Lieberman, you know, walking me up on the stage, because
wow.
Pat was supposed to be my presenter, Pat Summit, but Pat, her health has not been good lately, and so they wouldn't let her make the trip. But Hubie Brown and Nancy Lieberman Klein, you know, walked me up on the stage.
Wow. So I think I speak for all of your former players, but we are so proud of you and honored to be associated with the Carolina legacy that you've built over the years. In fact, there are many of your former players who are on standby who want to congratulate you, but we'll do that a little bit later in the show. This year, you hit a milestone of 900 wins, becoming one of the few active coaches, or actually the winningest coach in women's basketball. And I know Coach Stringer actually hit the 900 milestone as well. I was commentating your home game against Duke, and I was hoping that it would happen then. But how did it feel when you finally reached 900 wins?
Oh, wow. Well, it was a monkey off my back. Because, Sylvia, you know, it's not about me. You know, it's about the team, the current players that we have, and winning that game and all that. But, it was. And that was, you know, the Duke game was big. And, of course, we were the underdog. But, you know, it was a lot of hype about that. And I really want it to be about the kids and not about me. So once we won that game, and we actually won it against Boston College, you know, where – you know, you were the former head coach there, and it was on the road and all that. So, but once that happened, it was like, okay, this is over with. Now we can relax and move on and get back to business and work on, NCAA and ACC and going, you know, winning a championship.
Right. I came to the Duke game to cheer you on to a victory for that game because I didn't want you to do it against my poor little babies at Boston College. But
they were great. They were gracious. They just rolled out the red carpet for us. They were so nice to me and everything. And so they just did a fantastic job. And by the way, those people up there, they love you. And I'm just telling you, everybody, even the maintenance guys in the building, they were all asking me about you and talking about how much they loved you.
Oh, I miss them dearly. I used to play basketball with the maintenance guys at noon. At noon, we played noon ball together. your resume and what you've been able to do within women's basketball is pretty remarkable. But I believe that it is those timeout moments in life that force us to pause, assess the situation, correct some things, regroup, and resume with an opportunity to play, which is basically what a timeout does for a team. But it's those moments that I believe that have shaped you, Coach Hatchell, into the champion and even the Hall of Famer that you are today. What would you consider to be your greatest timeout moment?
Wow. I don't know. I've had a lot of them. You know, I really have. I've had a lot of them as you go along the way. But, you know, I think the biggest thing is you got to you got to stay grounded. You got to stay basic and fundamental and realize that, you know, it's about the kids. It's about the basic things of the game. And, you know, whether it's coaching, I mean, it's fundamentals. I mean, there's just no substitute for fundamentals. Everybody gets so caught up in so many other things that really don't matter and everything. And there's so many distractions. But, you know, it's about the kids, about the relationship with the kids. And one of the biggest things is, you know, I mean, as a coach, I do what I have to do, and I understand that they're not always going to understand. Now, you know this, after they get out of school, you know, years later, they're like, okay, now I get it. Now I know why she did this, you know, and then they come back and thank me for it. They don't always understand at the time, but, you know, there's just been so many things, you know, and you're keeping your integrity at times whenever there's things on the line and question marks and, you know, times when you just got to say, hey, listen, you know, and I tell people all the time two things about me. I'm honest and I'm loyal. Mm-hmm. I'm honest and I'm loyal. And I just don't, and my principles, I mean, you know that, I mean, the three things that I told them at the Hall of Fame this past weekend, there's three things, my faith and my family and then my friends, you know, and I people say, well, how have you been doing this for all these years, you know, I mean, how have you, you know, don't you get tired of it? Don't you get burnt out and all that stuff? But I have tremendous balance in my life, you know, and I think that's mm-hmm. the key. You know, I don't get burnt out because I do have such great balance, you know, because, you know, my faith is the most important thing in my life. I've been very, very blessed, you know, throughout situations. And I know when things aren't going well, there's a reason and everything's going to come around. You know, I just got to stay the course and persevere and, you know, keep doing what I've been doing, and then great things are going to happen. And I've always believed that givers gain. You know, the more you give, the more you're going to get back. And I've actually had contests before with, you know, myself where I would say, okay, things aren't going real well right now. Let me see what else I can give. All right, who needs this? What can I do for this person? I mean, it's never failed me. The more I give, the more I get back, and that's just and it doesn't matter. Things could be so bad for me, but I'm just saying, okay, I'm gonna give, and don't worry about it. And then all of a sudden, you start gaining, and it multiplies, and it's just an abundance, you know. And it may not be monetary, but it could just be a phone call, or you know, a recruit, or you know, anything like that. So you know, I've always believed that, and then. You know, my family is so important to me. I'm so blessed with a great husband and son, and you know, my staff. Of course, Coach Calder is like my brother, and we've been together forever. And you know, mm-hmm. so I just got a tremendous family. You know, great mom and dad that brought me up the right way, and you know, just great Christian principles and values and everything. And then you know, friends. Gosh, I got so many friends all over the world. I mean, you know, I got friends in the mountains, friends at the beach. You know, my basketball buddies, you know, and so those things keep my balance and help me keep things in perspective.
Right. Well, for me, a timeout moment for me, one of my greatest timeout moments was when I was diagnosed with an aneurysm on the right side of my brain. I mean, that was a situation that made me pause and say, whoa, let me figure out what's going on here. I had to assess the situation. I had to correct some things in terms of my diet and how much I was resting, how much water I was intaking, and then regroup. And now I've been able to resume with an opportunity to get it right, to perform better. So thinking about that, have you ever had personally, because you just named a bunch of things that you've kind of been through, but what personally have you been through that you would consider a timeout moment that made you say, wait a minute, let me pause for a second and see what's going on here?
Well, when we went to North Carolina, I got pregnant with Van, the birth of my son, because he was actually born on the day that we played NC State. And, you know, it was a struggle. I almost died having that little boy. But, you know, it was great. My greatest victory ever, without a doubt, is having
him.
And you know, he's the greatest kid in the world. You know, so that there. And then, you know, just in 2000, I had my own cancer scare. I had to have a complete hysterectomy, and I had some tumors on my ovaries, and they were not looking good, and my test results came back CA125 and different things like that. And so we did not an emergency operation, but a pretty, you know, as soon as the elevation of my counts and stuff like that went up, we operated. And but the tumors, they took them all, everything out, but they were all benign, no cancer at all. So that was a moment when it was like, you know, hey, basketball doesn't really matter, you know. But I was so thankful that you know, I got a really good report. And so, you know, the Lineberg Cancer Center's big. I have a blueberry patch up in the mountains, 240 blueberry bushes, and people pick blueberries, and all the money goes to the Lineberg Cancer Center on our campus. So just want to give back to those people that have done so much for me. And, you know, then with my parents, the death of my parents, both of them, the situations, and I went through a couple heart attacks with my mom and different things like that, you know, because my family is so extremely important to me and everything. So, but, you know, anytime you go through tough times, it really, it centers you, it gets you more focused, it makes you realize what is important, you know, and that it's not, you know, just, it's not about basketball, but it's about people and about relationships and those type of things. And we all need that from time to time, you know,
right.
We really do. And everything happens for a reason. You know, I've learned that. And you know, we don't understand when things happen. And, you know, if we had another couple hours, I could tell you a story a couple years ago that happened with my team. And, you know, I couldn't figure out why we were going through what we were going through, what happened and all that and all. But it's a tremendous story about, you know, what I did to get the team motivated at postseason play and how we actually went to the Elite Eight. And it was just an incredible run. And then after it was all over, I told that story and how it affected a man that was having a had to have a heart transplant and everything, and how we were able to help him get through that. And now he goes out and does this all over the United States. And none of that would have happened if my team hadn't had to go through, if we hadn't gone through what we had to go through. Because we wouldn't have been able to reach out to him and tell him our story and what we did, and now he's spreading it all over the world. So everything happens for a reason. We don't always understand, but you know, but it is you know, it, I mean, I just every day it's an opportunity, it's a challenge, and all. And again, I think the opportunities, you got to take advantage of the opportunities when God puts them in front of you, because when they are gone, they are gone. You know, so take advantage of the opportunities that God puts in front of you every day.
I feel like I'm...
You didn't know you were going to get
preached, like
though, did you?
Yeah, I feel like I'm back in North Carolina in the circle before practice starts, holding hands with my...
you didn't know I was going to preach to you.
All right, so you have one of the largest basketball camps in the country. And a lot of people don't know this about you, but you love camp. Can you explain to our listeners why you love camp so much?
Well, I love kids. You know, I've always loved kids. And, you know, and of course, my master's degree at the University of Tennessee was in education, but it was my emphasis was in elementary education, physical education. And so, you know, I love kids. I love being in the gym with them. I love teaching them. You know, I love the camaraderie of the staff that we have. And, you know, people say, oh, they just make so much money. No, we really don't, because we don't charge that much. We're one of the cheapest camps in the country, but our numbers are large. But, and my staff comes back year after year after year. We have a tremendous staff. And so, the, you know, again, the relationship's there. And, Sylvia, you're not going to believe this, but our retention rate for camp is probably close to 70%. I'd say 65 to 70%. That's really high when you consider
a lot of those kids
age out, and where they can't come back because they get too old to come back. But we have a tremendous group that comes back every year. But I enjoy camp. I love it, and it's hard work now. I mean, it is hard work. But I'm not.
And you went to camp
work.
Yourself as a youngster, didn't you?
Oh yeah. We used to. Well, we didn't have all the basketball camps like we have now, but we went to church camp. We went to church up to camp up in the mountains of North Carolina, and of course they had lots of sports and everything. And I love that. Anytime I can compete and play doing anything, whether it's basketball, softball, horseshoes, football. I remember I was so upset when my mom made me stop playing tackle football with all the boys in the neighborhood, so then they let me be quarterback, and it was a two-hand touch rule. All I had to do was touch me with two hands, but I was the quarterback, so I learned, I could throw and run and do all that stuff, so I learned to be a pretty good quarterback and all that. So, it's great. I love it.
Okay, so if there's anyone listening on the call and you're interested in camps, you could go online to GoHeels.com, go to the women's basketball page, and click on their camps. Coach Hatchell, you got your start coaching at Frances Marion. How old were you when you got that job?
Well, Sylvie, we need to actually back up a little bit because when I was a senior at Carson Newman College in Jefferson City, Tennessee, I was playing basketball, and there was a little bitty school, little country school right outside of Jefferson City, Tennessee, called Talbot, T-A-L-B-O-T, Talbot Elementary. And they needed a coach for their 7th and 8th grade girls. They had a 7th and 8th grade, it went 1 through 8, school did, and their 7th and 8th grade girls needed a coach, and they played 3-on-3, and so I told the principal, Mr. Northern, Tommy Northern, he's still alive, and I just went to see him not long ago. I did a 900-win thank you tour, and I went to see Mr. Northern. And I told him, I said, Mr. Northern, if you'll work the practices out so that I will not have to miss my practices at Carson Newman, then I'll coach the little girls for you. And so we did that, and I coached those little girls, played 3-on-3. We were like 18-6. We won the conference championship. I had 3 kids make all conference, and some of those kids still stay in touch with me. But I was hooked. After that, I was absolutely hooked. And then I went on to graduate school at Tennessee, and then, Pat and I were together there, and Pat had so many girls try out for the team at Tennessee that she asked the administration if we could have a JV team. And so they let us do that, and we only played about 12 games, but Pat asked me if I'd coach the JV team, and so I did. And I think we were like 10-2. But that was, again, tremendous experience. And, and then, of course, I went straight to Frances Marion. And when I went there, my first year of coaching, I had a player that was older than I was. So, I was 23, and I was a head coach at a college when I was 23. And, but then it was great. Frances Marion, it was a great place for me, great people, and I had some great kids. And, in fact, some of them came up for the Hall of Fame this past weekend. A great Hall of Famer, Pearl Moore, was up for the Naismith this weekend. And, we did great. I mean, I won 2 championships there, AIAW and 82, and then the NAIA, AIAW dissolved. And then we went NAIA, and we won that in 86.
Wow. Now, you didn't have all the assistant coaches and grad assistants and undergrad assistants and managers and practice players that you manage now. Talk to us about all the responsibilities that you had when you coached at Frances Marion.
Sylvia, let me tell you. What was an assistant coach? I was there 11 years. My last 2 years, I had a part-time assistant, all right? And it was Gail Moody Johnson. And she works my camps every year, and always has. But I was by myself. I mean, I drove the bus, I swept the floor, I washed the uniforms. If it got done, I did it, But I loved it. I loved it. And my first job there, of course, I coached the basketball team, but I also was intramural director. I was a cheerleading sponsor. I know you're going to laugh at that, but I was a cheerleading sponsor. And I taught 6 classes. And so, but I loved it, you know, and, but you know, like I said, we were in the gym all the time. I had a small little apartment. This was before I knew Sam, and I had a small little apartment, and I only went there to sleep a few hours every night because I stayed at the university all the time. And, you know, I was in hog heaven now, I'm telling you. It was the greatest thing, but I did everything, you know, and I learned how to do always. I mean, I taped ankles, you know, some of those kids probably still have scars from my ankles. My taping jobs on their ankles and all that, but I taped ankles. I was a strength training coach. I did everything, you know. So, but that's why you learn. You learn to be versatile and to do a lot of different things.
Right.
But I wouldn't give anything for those experiences. And the president of Francis Marion, Dr. Walter D. Smith, that hired me there, he is 94 years old, and I just went to see him also because I did that 900 win thank you tour, and I went to see everybody that had ever given me an opportunity. And they're all still alive, you know.
Wow.
So that was fun. I loved that. I had a blast doing that.
What a great opportunity. Well, I have one of those players whose ankles you probably taped on the line right now, and she's calling from a area code 4843. Annette, are you there?
Yes, I am. How are you doing?
I'm good. Did you have anything you wanted to say to Coach Hatchell?
Well, Coach Hatchell, for me, I just want to thank you for all of the things that you taught me. You took a skinny little black girl who could run and jump, and you taught me so much, not only on the basketball court, but you taught me a lot, you know, in life. I remember that I used to be in your office every day. You know, you're always, you know, encouraging me when I felt like I couldn't do anything right. You know, you were always inviting me to church, which meant a lot to me because you kept me grounded, not only on the basketball court and in the classroom, but you kept me grounded in life. You know, I tell everybody that I'm your daughter, but I do feel like you're like a second mom to me, and I'm just so proud of you for the accomplishments that you've had and you are having and will have, but I'm also proud that, you know, you always keep God first, and you are an example. Although I don't play for you anymore, you're still an example to me, and I just thank you a lot.
Well, I love you. You know that. Now, Sylvia, you got to understand here. Annette came and lived with me whenever Van was born. Now, the last month or so, whenever I was pregnant with Van, of course, you know, that was December, January. He was born January 24th. You know, Annette went with me to the game. She traveled with me, took care of me. And then the day that Van was born, the only person that I would let be there with me inside the room besides Sammy was Annette. You know, and she lived with us for about 6 or 8 months whenever Van was born. She was his first nanny, but she took care of me and she took care of Van. And Van still, he just loves her to death. But she is, without a doubt, she's like one of my daughters. And, you know, I'd do anything in the world for her. But she's the only one that I would let be there in the room and be with me and see me in that situation and everything. But I can't say enough about Annette. And, you know, and whenever I recruited her and her sister Jeanette, twins, tremendous athletes. I mean, when I saw them both, we had a tryout, and they ran the court. And one of them ran the length of the court in 3.4 seconds, and the other one ran
no
in
way.
3.3. Yes, the length of the court. We timed them. 3.3, 3.4, and they both could grab the rim. And I'm like, oh, I don't care if they can't shoot, dribble, nothing. I can teach them basketball skills. But that athleticism, you know, you just, I mean, there was no way. I mean, but, yeah, they were that fast and that athletic.
Wow. You can't teach that. You know what I mean?
You can't teach
athleticism.
That.
Well, you speaking of a twin sister, you know, we couldn't let one twin speak without letting the other twin speak. So I actually have Jeanette from Francis Marion, who you probably also taped her ankle, and she's probably got black and blue marks today. Jeanette, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Did you want to say
Jeanette.
Something to Coach Hatchell?
Hi, Coach Hatchell. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm doing even better than I'm talking to you guys.
Okay, first I would say, yes, I still hold the award for being the moodiest player that you've ever coached. I take pride in that. But first of all, I would like to congratulate you for being inducted into the Neese Fitz Hall of Fame. I would like to also say thank you for taking a chance on a skinny kid who could only run and jump. One thing I would like for you to know is that even though you pushed me hard in practice and just in practice and in the classrooms and just pushed me in life, you encouraged me to do a lot of things that I would not have done. Yes, I was moody when I came to practice. It was only because I knew you were going to put a whole load of stuff on me that you wanted me to work on. You were going to push me and push me and push me. But if you didn't push me, I wouldn't have done it. You knew what to do, when to do it. Sylvia, you all don't know this, but I used to go from volleyball practice to basketball practice. And then after basketball practice, I had to go and see Sammy for another hour and a half and work on individual skills. And I was always saying, why me? Why do I have to do this? But Coach saw the potential, and she pushed me to be the very best. And one of the things I wanted to let you know was I had two coaches at Francis Marion, and I tell people to this day, you were the coach that cared about what happened to us as human beings, not just as athletes. You worried about what we were doing in our personal lives, in the classroom, even on the basketball court. There were times you're not the one that would always come and say blah, 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 but you knew when to say something to someone and when not to. And to this day, I tell everyone, you're the reason why I'm where I am today. And I would like to thank you for being that will of inspiration. So I am honored to tell someone that you coached me and that I know you as a person and a friend. So thank you very much.
Girl, you're going to make me cry. I mean, I can remember her freshman year, she had so much potential. But when Sylvia, when she shot, the ball was way back behind her head. And I remember we used to go and just slap that ball out. When she'd put it back behind her head, we'd slap it out and she'd cry. You know, she'd call her mama up and want to come home and want to transfer. And her mama said, you stay right there. Anyway, but I just knew the potential she had. And she ended up being an All-American in volleyball and basketball. But we won a national championship in 86. I mean, Jeanette was just an incredible, incredible athlete, incredible player. And then she went on and was a great coach as well. I mean, she was a really, really good coach. In fact, the AD at Chowan College, Chowan University now, told me one time that one of the greatest decisions he ever made as an AD was to a recommendation that I gave him was to hire Jeanette Austin. But anyway, you know, they're great kids, and what an opportunity it was for me to have those kids, and you know, that was fun. So I love you too, Jeanette.
Jeanette's back on mute. They said too much. But I want to thank both the Austin twins for taking time out of their schedule. I know that they're probably at work today, but they said that for me to definitely count them in on today. I want to say this. For years, you have been giving your players a quote for the day, every day before you start practice. And this, you know, this little timeout period where you gave us a quote gave you a chance to talk about character, determination, giving. Sometimes it will be a Bible verse. I want to ask you, what is your all-time favorite quote?
Oh, wow. I've got so many. It changes as time moves along in my life and everything. You know, I tell people all the time, you know, I say, look, I'm too blessed to be stressed. You know, everybody talks about stress now and all these different things and pressures. I said, I'm too blessed to be stressed, you know. And when you think about all your blessings and everything that happens to you all the time, hey, there is no stress, you know. And plus, you know, as a coach, the stress that you have, that's got to be something you embellish. That's got to go along with the game and everything like that. But, you know, right now, the one that I really love and I use is giver's gain, because I really do. I believe that giver's gain, and Sylvia, it's like this. You know, we didn't come into this world with anything, and we're not going to leave with anything. Now, what we have while we're here, you know, it's really not ours, because we're not going to take it with us. But, you know, God has put us in charge of it while we're here to maneuver, to use, to utilize, and to manage. You know, we manage what we have while we're here, you know. Mm-hmm. So what we do with it is, you know, it's up to us, you know. And again, I feel like the more I give, the more I get back. There is no, I don't question that one bit. You know, so I do feel like giver's gain. And, you know, so, I mean, anytime somebody needs something, you know, whatever it might be, you know, I'm saying, okay, yeah, sure, that's no problem. You know, so because, I mean, like I said, I'm not going to take it with me. And I want to use it to the best of my abilities why I'm here and why I have control over it. You know, so, you know, people will tell me lots of times, hey, you're crazy. Why are you doing this? Why are you helping this person? Why are you this, that, and the other, you know, or this person's done this to you. And I said, look, you know, you treat other people the way you want to be treated, not how they treat you. You know, you treat other people the way you want to be treated. And that's how you have chemistry with people, too. You know, and of course, success in everything is about relationships. You know, so it doesn't matter how somebody's treated me. You know, I'm going to treat them the way I would want to be treated. You know, and sometimes that's tough love. Sometimes it's tough love and doing something that they don't want you to do, because I tell people all the time, I said, one of the greatest things you can have in this life is someone to make you do what you won't make yourself do. And, you know, in coaching, that happens a lot. You know, and people don't understand why you make them do things at times. But that is one of the greatest gifts that you can have.
I know you make me do a lot of stuff I didn't want to do.
And I still do that. But I understand that there are a point in time in their life when they don't understand that, but later on they will.
Right. Now, you didn't always have a lot of success at North Carolina. In fact, when you recruited me, North Carolina was dead last in the conference. I remember my dad saying, what are you doing? This team's not even ranked. So talk about your humbling beginnings at the University of North Carolina and what you had to do to turn things around.
Well, you know, everything had gone really, really well at Francis Marion. We were, you know, a great team. And those last few years when I was there, we beat every Division I school we played. You know, I mean, Clemson, South Carolina, NC State. You know, KL would have told you to her last day on this earth that probably her greatest loss was whenever Francis Marion came up to Reynolds Coliseum, and we didn't just beat them, we beat them badly, you know. And, you know, Kay, that's one time when we developed we already had a great relationship, but, you know, so but, you know, we were having some success there. So, and then Kay actually helped me get the job at North Carolina, along with Pat and Billy Moore and Bill Wall and a lot of other people. So, but then when I came to North Carolina, that first year, and when you make a change from one level to the other, there's always transition, you know. And so, but as we were starting things at North Carolina, of course, Coach Calder came with me and all. And but also, Sylvia, and I haven't really ever said a lot about this. I talked at the Hall of Fame this weekend a little bit about it in a couple of interviews, but you know, at that time is when, you know, I was helping Kay in the spring. When I got the job that summer, I was assistant coach for Kay, and we coached the Goodwill Games and the World Championships, both of those.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and we won gold medals. And so, and I told Kay, I said, because she knew, I told you earlier, you know, I'm honest and I'm loyal. And my loyalty was to her. And so I told her, I said, Kay, whatever I can do to help you be the 88 Olympic coach, I will do. And so, you know, then because she had just been named Olympic coach, and then that next summer, 87, was when she was first diagnosed with cancer. And so Kay was, because she was taking chemo and everything and trying to get through the breast cancer, there was a whole lot to prepare for the 88 Olympics that she could not do. And so I had to put things on hold at North Carolina to go do what I needed to do, scouting, European championships, you know, a lot of things to get things ready for the 88 Olympics, because, like I said, Kay's health was not good. And so I really, that really put us on the back burner with the recruiting at North Carolina. And like I said, I've never really talked much about this, and I'm not making excuses. I don't want people to think I'm making excuses, but I'm just actually telling the truth about this. So, you know, I couldn't put the time into it, you know, then. So, but soon as the 88 Olympics were over, and we went, let's see, first year, 86, 87, we were 19-10, and then we went 3 years where we did not have winning season. We were last in the league. We were pretty bad. And that was 88, 89, and 90. And, again, that was, you know, from the Olympics time. And then, of course, those next 2 years, 88 and 89, were you know, when we didn't have the players, because, you know, I had not gotten a job done with recruiting because I was, you know, just when they would put the time into it. And so anyway, but once the Olympics was over with and we jumped into the recruiting, and then we got that class in there, and I guess it was 1991 with you and Tanya Sampson, and then Charlotte Smith and Stephanie Lawrence and all that group, you know. So once we were able to really get things rolling with recruiting, you know, then we turned things around. And, you know, we went from last in the league to a national championship in 3 years. And it was because of the kids we brought in, like you. I mean, you and
right.
Samson, you know, and Charlotte and all that. So,
well, looking back at it, I believe that there was a mentality shift that started to occur right before I got to North Carolina. You had some key people in place when I got there, like Emily Murphy, Lee Waddell, mm-hmm. Leanne, Tanya Lamb,
mm-hmm.
Dawn Bradley, who they were hard workers. When I got there, they taught me how to roll up my sleeves and work. So did you feel like you were headed in the right direction prior to bringing me, Charlotte, Samson, and that group in?
Yes, and I don't want those kids that played during the 87 to 90 time period to feel like that we didn't appreciate the hard work they did, you know, but we didn't have enough to do what we needed to do. You know, those were great kids, and they did work hard, and we did, you know, go to the NCAA tournament. I guess it was in 91 that we got back in there, because we went like 3 years or so without making the tournament and everything, so... But they were good kids, and they worked very hard. We just needed a few more, just a couple more players like you and Samson to come in there and help us, you know, get over the hump. But, you know, sometimes, you know, before you can run, you have to walk. And sometimes
mm-hmm.
before you can walk, you have to crawl. Well,
mm-hmm.
you know, we had to crawl before we could walk, and then we had to walk before we could run. But and then also, you know, Sylvia, I'm okay. Now, you know this. I got to say thank you to John Swofford, because he was the athletic director that hired me there. But he knew what I was doing. He knew about the Olympics. He knew how hard I was trying, what I was trying to get done. And he
mm-hmm.
gave me the time. Nowadays, that probably would not happen. You know,
oh, no.
Because when you have 3 years losing seasons, last in the league and all that, you know, there's not many ADs that would give you that. You know, but John Swofford did. In fact, Sylvia, when we were going through all this, I remember one night, I was walking out of the weight room, and this is why John Swofford is such a great, great administrator, and I think the greatest man in athletics today, is he put his arm around me, and he this is all he said to me. He said, we were coming out of the weight room one night, it was rainy and cold, and he'd been over to football because Mac Brown was our football coach at the time, and he had been through two seasons of 1-10, 1-10, you know, very similar to what I was going through before he got things turned around, you know, in football. So, but I was coming out of the weight room, and John came out of another door, and we, you know, this was not planned. And he, as we walked to the car, all he said to me is, he put his arm around me, and he said, you are my coach, and I believe in you. That's all he said.
Mm-hmm.
And then he went and got in his car. Well, I'm going to tell you, because he said that to me, I wanted to work night and day. I wanted to win for him, because he
mm-hmm.
said, you are my coach, and I believe in you. You know, and so, you know, then, of course, we got things rolling. And once we started rolling now, woo-wee, it was a snowball. You know, it was fun and great kids. And you guys, I'm telling you, there's some days, if I had been on that team, I would have walked out. I don't know if I could have taken it, but you guys were so tough. And the harder we were on you, the more y'all bonded together, you know. And, I mean, the chemistry was incredible. It was incredible,
well,
but you guys bonded.
Let me jump in right here, because I contribute that atmosphere that we had and how hard we worked and the mental toughness we developed to leadership. And I know that you strongly believe in leadership, and being a captain at UNC was such a big deal. You know, I'll never forget when I did not want the responsibility of being a captain, and you nominated me anyways. you just threw me out of the fire.
I'll have to tell you the truth about that now. I'll have to tell you the truth
about
that.
Oh, here we go. Go ahead.
No, I'm telling you. I remember when you were a sophomore and we were going to play, I think at Maryland, and we was riding up the road on the bus, and you forgot your shoes. I mean, you know, here we're going to play, and you know, you forgot your shoes, and I'm like, oh no. And then I remember the coaching staff, we were talking about captains, and I think it was Coach Calder, one of them said something about Sylvia Crawley. I said, no way. I said, if she can't remember to take her shoes, I said, no way. He said, Coach, give her a chance. He said, I promise you, she'll get the job done. She's got what it takes, and she'll get the job done. And so, you know, that's why he's so smart, and that's why he's on my staff. And so I said, okay, all right, we're going to give her a shot. We're going to give her a chance. And you did. I mean, you took the ball and you ran with it. You know, but again, seeing you from when you came in as a freshman until you graduated, I don't know if I've ever had a kid develop, mature, like you did. I mean, I'm talking about not just basketball-wise, you know, but off the court, you know, and everything like that, your leadership and all that stuff. I don't think I've ever had a kid that's improved as much as you did.
I think I'm the type of person where if you make me do it, if my back is against the wall, I'll do it. But mm-hmm. early in my life, especially when I was at North Carolina, you had to put me in a position to do it. And if I felt like you believed in me, I'd move a mountain for you. I was just one of those kids. So I thank you for giving me an opportunity. However, there was one captain who took me under her wing and taught me exactly how you expected us to lead at UNC. And she actually taught me how to be a player, a North Carolina player. And one day during my freshman year, you were riding my butt in practice. I mean, I couldn't do anything right. And you made everyone get on the line to run for something that I did. And so all my teammates were just kind of fussing at me like, come on, Sylvia, like we're not going to be running for you. And I was a freshman. So I lined up with everyone else with big old crocodile tears in my eyes. And this player ran over to me, and she said, put your head back. Don't you blink. We don't cry in our practices. Don't you ever let anyone know that they can break you, not even Coach Hatchell. You got to be mentally tough. And there were countless other conversations when the post players would run sprints, and I was running faster than everybody else. And the post players started giving me some problems in the locker room, saying that I was trying to get brownie points for you because my name was Sylvia and your name was Sylvia, and I was one of your favorite post players, and I was trying to impress you. So they said, you know, we got a pack here. We all come in on the line around the same time. But you're trying to outrun us and outshine us, you know. And this player pulled me to the side and said, don't you listen to them. We're tired of being last in the ACC. And Coach Hatchell brought you so that you can make a difference. But if you run with them, we never going to be out of the bottom of the conference, you know. So if you want to run faster, then you run with the guards. But don't listen to them. And so that player was actually Dawn Bradley, who I think was one of the greatest leaders of all time.
Yeah.
And I actually have Dawn on the call today. Dawn, are you there?
Oh, that's great. That's great.
I'm there. Hi, Coach Hatchell.
Hey, Dawn. Oh, mercy me, girl. Yeah, I mean, Sylvia's saying all this stuff, and I'm just saying, Dawn Bradley. I didn't even have to ask who it was, you know. So, but you're exactly right, Sylvia. I mean, Dawn Bradley was tough as nails. That's why I recruited her from South Carolina. You know, she's the one, when I got all the technicals down, when we played at South Carolina, and it was about a week before Van was born, and, you know, I was pregnant and out here, you know, I couldn't even get up. I mean, the assistant coaches had to get me up out of the chair and everything. And I remember Dawn got they called the fouls on Dawn at South Carolina, and I got up, and I was all over the referee, and he gave me a technical. Foul. Tommy Salerno was the referee, and he gave me a technical foul. And so then, you know, I knew I wasn't going to be able to get up a whole lot during the game. And so he was over at the table reporting the technical foul. And they'd had a little situation, I don't know, in the ACC at the time, and he wasn't officiating in the league at that time. He actually got back in later. But, you know, so I went over to the table, and I looked at him, and I said, no wonder you got kicked out of the ACC. And boom, he gave me another one, gave me two technicals. And this was when you had to have three before they'd throw you out. And I remember somebody up in the stands hollered down there, why don't you give one to the baby? And I'll never forget that. But I remember that I was standing up arguing and fighting for Dawn Bradley because she was playing so hard. And that was her territory, too. She was from down there, and I wanted her to do well. So, but you're right. There, we've had Dawn is without a doubt been one of the greatest leaders we ever had. And I believe Dawn started Hoop Fi. Isn't that right, Dawn?
Yes, she did.
I did.
Hoop Fi Incorporated. Who? Bobby?
I thought she did. When we play at Georgia Tech, I love it because Dawn always comes. I bring her in the locker room, and she always talks to the team. And, you know, I introduce her as Dr. Dawn, and also, but yeah, she's great. I love you, Dawn.
I love you,
Dawn,
too, Coach
Hatchell. Did you have something you wanted to say to Coach Hatchell, Dawn?
Yeah, I just want to thank you, just really echo what Annette Jeanette said earlier about really giving me a chance as another little skinny black girl from the South. At the time, I know you didn't have the time to bring on all the players that you probably wanted to, but you gave me a chance. And when my role changed on the team, as you brought in these players that were a little bit more heavier recruited, you told me that my role was going to change. I came back from a knee surgery, so I wasn't starting anymore, and I was a little down about it, but you really made me feel comfortable with how my role was going to change on that team, being a leader and making sure that everybody came in, knew how you wanted practices to run and knew how hard you wanted us to work and what our goals were going to be and how we're not going to accept being last place anymore. And I really took a lot of pride in that, and all those lessons have carried me far beyond basketball, being a leader and how important it is to help people grow and change and be better and do great things. And I really appreciate you believing in me and having the confidence in me to take on a leadership role, even though I wasn't starting. There's not a lot of captains that are not starting or getting a lot of playing time. But you put that confidence in me, you know, and all the jewels that you passed on to me about living in a fishbowl and, you know, circling your wagons and, you know, just the confidence and the priority on us in the classroom as well, you know. You really rewarded us when we did good, when we made the dean's list. You made a big deal about us, and, you know, doing that and making sure that we felt we were as important as a student as well as an athlete. All those things has carried me far beyond Carolina. And I just thank you so much for all the lessons, and I'm so proud of you. Congratulations on the Hall of Fame. They could not have made a better selection.
Well, I appreciate that. And you said a lot of things that, you know, mean a lot to me. I mean, you're talking about academics, and, you know, I hadn't said a lot about that, but, you know, my 28 years at North Carolina, every kid that has been there for 4 years and finished their eligibility, which we've had very, very few transfers, very few, you know, but every kid that's been there and finished their eligibility has a degree except for like two, and those two only need a couple of classes, and that's because they're all playing basketball right now, either in WNBA or Europe or something like that. So, you know, and we're trying to finish those up within this next year. But, you know, we've had pretty much every kid has graduated, and that's real important to me. And you know, then you said something else. You said this, and so did Aunt Jeanette about giving a, you know, skinny little black kid an opportunity and all that. And I'm going to tell you, somebody asked me one time about, and I ever had an ethical or a situation, a racial situation or anything like that. I said, Lord, no. I said, I probably get along better with black people than I do with white people. I said, I love black people. I said, you know, I said, I have never had a situation on any of my teams. I said, I don't look at what color their skin is. I said, I look at what's inside of them. I said, but I love black people. And, you know, so, and I really, and somebody said, I can't believe all these years you've never had any kind of racial situation. I said, no. That's nothing anywhere close to that. You know,
I gotta stop you for a second. Let me say this.
Okay.
One time I was working your camp, and I was we were riding a van from the Smith Center to Carmichael, and we had Van in the car. He must have been no more than like 3 years old. I mean, he was just starting to talk and carry conversations. So we used to ask him a bunch of questions and laugh at him. So one day we were riding, and it was quiet in the van, and Van just hauls out and says, I love black people. God knows I do. Some of my best friends are black. And we just bust out laughing. And we knew that he was around that age where he was repeating everything that he heard. And we all knew, like, he got this from his mom. He must have heard Sammy and Coach Hatchell saying this somewhere around the house and picked this up. But we laughed and we laughed, and we never forgot that. But we knew that at his house, the conversations that he was hearing was that he loved black people. And so
he does because he knows his mom and daddy do.
But I think it's you know, it's just, it's a testament to you that over the years you would have even African-American players call you mom, mama to this day. You know, we all say, well, Mama Hatchell, she wants you to call her, or she wants you in the office, you know. And sometimes, you know, if you're from the opposite race, sometimes it's hard to see that person as your mother away from home when you go to college. But, you know, we actually looked to you as our second mother while we were away. And I just think that's a testament to who you are and your character and how you interacted with us and how you nurtured us and loved us and fought battles for us and everything.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, one time someone asked me and said, well, you know, what would you do, or how would you feel if Van, you know, wanted to marry a black girl? I said, I wouldn't have any problem at all with that. I said, I love black people. I said, I would not have one problem at all. You know, I said, in fact, I would love it. And so, but I just, you know, again, I don't mean to make an issue here, but I just want to tell you that, you know, somebody asked me that one time, and I was just like, you know, I do. I said, I probably get along better with black people than I do with white people. Because I love the music, and I love, you know, coming to your house and, you know, I love, you know, going to church and with black folks, and I really, I feel more at home, you know, when I'm with black people than I do with white people. So,
I have to tell this funny story. When you came to my house for a home visit, my mom was really nervous because, you know, she said, well, should I cook for Coach Hatchell? Like, what should we do? And so she was cooking for my dad, like she does every day, but she cooked pork chops and fried cabbage and probably some rice, you know, or some, I don't know, some vegetable or something. And so she said that she didn't want to put you on the spot because she said, Sylvia, I don't know if she eats fried cabbage and pork chops and stuff. You know, that's black people's food. So she said, I know what I'm going to do. We're going to take her to Ponderosa. That's our best restaurant in Steubenville. So you came to my practice, and then after practice you came to the house, and we showed you photo albums and talked to you, and you met everybody in my family. But you kept going in the kitchen pretending like you were looking at my newspaper clippings on the refrigerator, but really you were sniffing in this pot of cabbage that my mother was making. And so later we said, okay, Coach Hatchell, let's go. Jimmy's going to eat this food, but we're going out to Ponderosa. I'm going to take you out for a special meal. And we left and went to a restaurant. And later that night, or the next day when you got home, you gave me a call. And you thanked me for the home visit and everything. You told me to thank my mama. You said, but I sure was wishing that she would offer me some of that fried cabbage. That's my favorite dish.
And, you know,
and I told my mom, and she was so embarrassed that she did not offer you fried cabbage. She said, I didn't think she would like fried cabbage. I didn't want to put her on the spot. And we just laughed.
I can't believe you're telling that, but it's the truth without a doubt, because, you know, I love cooked cabbage. Part of my favorite thing to eat is cooked cabbage. So, but anyway, yeah, that's true. I stood there in the kitchen and kept looking at that pot of cooked cabbage in there. So, but anyway, that's fun. That brings back a lot of good memories.
Now, I want to say you've been coaching for almost four decades now. This is your 39th season as a coach?
39th.
And so obviously over the course of time, the athletes have changed dramatically. Have you had to adjust your approach to today's time, or have you stayed true to your philosophy that you've developed and players have to adjust to you and your philosophy?
Well, I mean, there's no doubt that kids have changed. I admit that. They've changed. But why have they changed? Well, kids are kids. I'd say probably 90% of the time, kids are a victim of the environment they are in, whether it's the people they're around, the environment they've been brought up in, you know, but kids are kids, you know, and so, and I've had through the years, you know, I've adjusted and stuff, but, you know, Sylvia, it's, and I'm going to tell you, and again, I'm going to preach a little bit here, but one of the best things was probably 10, 12, 15 years ago, something like that, I became aware of the five love languages. And, you know, I started using that because, you know, again, like I said, kids are kids. And everybody has needs you know, you got to meet their needs and all that they have. And I learned through the five love languages of what you have to do and about the different needs that they have and everything like that. So because you know, and they are physical touch, you know, and I could go through if we had time players, the needs that they have, and I would figure out what their love language was. But it was either physical touch, quality time, words of affirmation, you know, could be gifts or acts of service, you know. Mm-hmm. And when you meet that love language of that person, you know, then that really helps, you know, you can communicate and connect with them and all that stuff, you know. So when I started figuring out what the love language was of each kid, you know, I think that helped me with my relationship with our players. And, you know, like, you know, I just hired Ivory Latta. You know, there was no doubt that her love language was words of affirmation. And I know that, you know, Camille Little, it was physical touch. And then, you know, most everybody has like two, a dominant mm-hmm. one and a secondary one, you know. Mm-hmm. And so, well, Tangela Atkinson, it was quality time. You know, so
what would you say was mine?
Well, let me think a little bit about you. I think words of affirmation are important to you, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, you the way you were motivated and everything, you know, and how you grow, you don't like to disappoint people, you know, and you know, you come from a really good family and everything where, you know, you weren't deprived like a lot of kids were. I mean, you had a very loving family and all, so, but I think, and I'm not sure, you know, I don't think gifts are important to you. You know, acts of service, you know, to me, that's big. And that could be part of you. See, my two are words of affirmation and acts of service. You know, people that do things without you having to make them do them or tell them to do them and stuff like that. You know, like players that go beyond the call of duty to do things. You know, to me, that's acts of service, you know. And everything like that. So, but let me think about you a little bit. But
I would think you're right in saying words of affirmation because I grew up with a lot of support. Like my family was supportive. If I had a game,
yes.
the whole
oh,
family
yes.
was
you
there,
great,
sitting together with their Sunday's best clothes on. So I got a lot of support and praise being the youngest kid. And so when I got to North Carolina, You all made me feel very comfortable with my early role as a defender and learning to be a better rebounder. But you got me to buy into defense by saying, Sylvia Crawley, nobody has scored with their back to the basket on you in 8 games straight. Do you know that? And I was like, what? And then you started praising me whenever we had an appearance or something, and you would call the players one by one and say a little something about them. The stuff that you said about me were words of affirmation. And the more you affirmed me, the harder I worked. And
I would say that was
true in terms of words of affirmation because I grew up that way, having that with my family and my parents.
Right. Well, that's already always been big, you know, I think. But kids have changed. But, again,
mm-hmm.
it's because our world has changed and the environment
right.
has changed. And, you know, lots of times, you know, I know with Coach Carter we'll be talking about kids and I'll say something about what's going on. And he'll say, Coach, that's just the way they are nowadays. That's just the way they are. And I said, Andrew, look, I said, that doesn't mean it's right. That doesn't mean it's right. You know, that our world accepts that or says this is okay or, you know, hey, there's no problem with this. I said, but that doesn't mean that it's right, you know. So,
mm-hmm.
so I've adjusted some as we go along, a little more, I guess, tolerant of different things. But overall, you know, I'm rock solid. My principles are the same. You know, I can be flexible. I can be flexible here and everything like that. Now Miss Ivory Latta is just right here with me. Because we're finishing up with the Hall of Fame, you know, getting ready to head back. So Miss Ivory Latta has just come right here, and I'm talking with Miss Sylvia Crawley right now. So she said, "What's happening?" So, but anyway,
tell her we're live on a radio show right now.
She said, "Tell you we're live on a radio show right now." So she's my new assistant coach. That's why she's here with me right now, Ivory.
I
just talked about you, girl. I just talked about Ivory.
I'm going to get her on
the
show at a later time, and as soon as she gets acclimated to her.
On her live radio show at a later time. So
okay.
She She's got to switch my phone back for me. So, but anyway, okay. You know, the kids are kids, but you know, you do. I am not. My principles don't change, but I think every player, every situation has to be looked at individually. You know, mm-hmm. you just can't say this is the rule, and hey, this is the way it's going to be. You know, it's but you got to look at the situations with every kid. Mm-hmm. You know, why they do things. I mean, I've had kids before that have gotten in trouble, and I think why do they keep doing this? You know, and it's because of their need. They have a need for attention. You know, and
right.
again, you look at the five love languages. Why do they need attention? You know, is it because they need a hug, because of physical touch, is it because they need words of affirmation, or maybe it's some quality time? You know, I had a kid one time that was getting in trouble a lot, and I figured out it was because she just needed more quality time with the right kinds of people, you know? And
mm-hmm.
so, you know, we moved in that direction, and it made all the difference in the world and who she was and her not getting in trouble and excelling on the basketball court, you know? And then,
mm-hmm.
You know, the acts of service. You know, and some people's gifts, not many people, but those things are really, really good. And I have given that advice to a lot of coaches.
Yeah, I've read that book several times.
Well,
actually.
You've gotten lots of sermons today.
Now, we talked a little bit earlier about leadership and your captains. And when I think about it, most of your captains later became great leaders in life. Like some are head coaches or managers in their field of work. But most of your players who ended up coaching got their start right under you. And through all the Carolina players who coach, your reach and sphere of influence goes well beyond Chapel Hill. And I happen to have one of your former grad assistants on the phone for the national championship year. Tony Montgomery, are you there?
Oh, my
gosh.
Yes,
gosh.
I am. How are you all?
Hey, girl.
Hi, Coach Apple.
Oh,
how are
you? Lord mercy. I'm doing great. Now that I'm talking to you, I am.
I am
Tony,
so excited.
Tony, do you have something you want to say to Coach Hatchell?
Yes, I would. Coach Hatchell, I'd just like to say that because of your influence and your guidance during my 5 years at Carolina and giving me opportunities to learn more about the game and have the opportunity to coach on not only the national championship team, but I later moved on to Hampton University. And at this stage in my life, I continue to coach. I do youth coaching. But that opportunity was given to me because of something that you provided to me. And, you know, I heard you talk a lot about service and servitude, and that is one of the things that I captured at Carolina, being under your guidance and leadership. So I'm very much appreciative. I carry a lot of the things that and your spirit with me when I move forth in life. I'm currently a social worker in the city of Newport News, Virginia, and I'm a substance abuse counselor. And with all that you have given me in my life, I really hold on to that, and I'm so proud to say that I was under your tutelage and guidance for those 5 years.
Well, Tony, I'm going to tell you, I think back about you, and a couple things come to my mind. First of all, after you came to school, it was you came from Columbia, South Carolina to Chapel Hill to play for us, and, you know, just tremendous player there for Van McLeod in Columbia, and, you know, she was a great friend of mine. You know, but the fact that right after you came to school, not long after that, you know, you went through the death of your mother, and I know that was hard for you, and, you know, we tried to be there for you during that time and everything, but, you know, that made you even tougher, and I know that your mother was extremely proud of you. And then I can remember in practice, this is one of the things that is carved in my mind about practice is just how hard we practice and all. But the fact that on one practice, Tony got nailed over in the corner. They went after a loose ball. And when Tony came up, her tooth, her front tooth was still in the floor. It was in the floor in Carmichael Auditorium. Tony comes up, and she's toothless, and her tooth is in the floor. and we took her tooth out of the floor, and that tooth mark stayed in that corner until we put a brand new floor in. And I thought about actually going out there with a little chisel and a hammer and putting it back in there, because, you know, that was such a, that was, it just showed how hard she worked and the, how competitive those kids were. So, but I'll never forget that day whenever Tony got up and that her tooth was still in the floor there in Carmichael. And she was so excited and was such a great graduate, an assistant coach there for us in that national championship. And I think probably she was one of the ones that hugged me the hardest after we won the championship.
Yeah, I have a picture of that, of her hugging your neck, and she was jumping up and down, and you were jumping up and down. Tony, thank you for those comments. I have her back on mute because she'll bring up five other stories she wants to tell. We just don't have enough time for everything, Coach Hatchell. But
we need to do another.
We
need to do another show.
I know. We need a part two. Under your tutelage, there were, I would say, over 28 of your former coaches who are coaching basketball for a living somewhere. And you may not be aware of this, but we all have what we refer to as Hatchellisms that we have spread throughout the country. And in honor of you, this week on Facebook, we have been listing the all-time greatest Hatchellisms. And Dawn Bradley actually named a couple of them when she said, circle your wagons. And for those of you who are listening who are not, you know, within the Carolina Hoop 5 family, circle your wagons. We learned this on the very first meeting, you know, in our rule book, that if a player is fighting, Coach Hatchell does not condone any players leaving the bench and going out to help that player fight. But if one of your teammates gets hit or anything going on with your teammates, she wants us to circle our wagons and get around that player so that, you know, we can stop the fight or they can't continue to hit our teammate. And so that's what she means by circle your wagons. But you got to say it like this, circle your wagons. And then another Hatchellism is, ladies, you are living in a fishbowl. And for our listeners, this phrase means that, I mean, I'm actually like the interpreter for all these, this country grammar, but living in a fishbowl means that everywhere you go on campus or in life, people can see you. There's nowhere to hide in a fishbowl. You know, fish are swimming around and everybody can see you from all angles. And so she reminds us as, you know, as athletes for the University of North Carolina, whatever we do and wherever we go, people are watching us. And we represent our team, we represent our families, we represent the university. And so that's what she means by living in a fishbowl. We've heard you say stuff like, I'm going to need you to put your big girl panties on now. And then here's my personal favorite, Sylvia Crowley. And I'm saying this in your voice. You know I can imitate you better than anybody, Coach Hatchell. Did you know that?
Yes, you can. Yes, you can.
You've asked me to do it, and I wouldn't do it in front of you, but I'm going to do it today on this show. You would say to me, Sylvia Crowley, if you put your body on your man and box her out, I promise you, you'll have a heyday on the boards. And one day I finally turned around and said, a heyday? Like, I was thinking of I'm from Steubenville, Ohio. I'm from up north. So I had never heard any of these sayings before ever in my life. And I said, a heyday? You said, yeah, like a fun day in the hay. You ever been on a hay ride where you just play in the hay? And I said, no, I've never been on a hay ride. You said, well, we're going to take you on a hay ride later on this year. And sure enough, we went on a hay ride. We had a bunch of hay in a wagon, and we went through this trail, and we sang songs, and I finally realized what a heyday was. But those are just a few of what we refer to as Hatchellisms, just for your information.
Now, well, I appreciate that. I probably got a lot more now that I'm using that you probably need to add to the list.
Now, let's talk a little bit about the outlook for this year's team. How's your workouts going with this group, and are you going to be more post or guard oriented this year?
Well, you know, first of all, I haven't been able to spend that much time with them like I want to. We're just starting with workouts and everything, individual workouts. We've had quite a few of them, especially our new kids, come in that were injured and banged up and all that stuff, you know, so we're just trying to get them all healthy and everything. So now I would say that we're going to be more guard-oriented because, you know, we graduated Watea Roll, and so, you know, we've lost some height there, even though we do have Stephanie Mubunga, and Stephanie is a freshman. She's about 6'4", you know, so but we're going to be very, very young. We have no seniors on the team, no seniors at all. And so, but we've got four juniors, five sophomores, and four freshmen. And so we are going to be extremely young. And, you know, so we got a lot of question marks right now. But we did have the number one recruiting class in the country last year with Diamond DeShields. She was, you know, Naismith National Player of the Year, Alicia Gray, and then Jessica Washington. She's a point guard, and then Stephanie Mubunga. And so we've got some young talent, but we have no seniors. So a lot of question marks. Now, you know, down the road, we could be very good if we can stay healthy. You know, that's always such a key, because a couple of years ago I thought we were going to be pretty good, and we ended up with three ACLs and two shoulder surgeries, and we were down to six players at one time. So, you know, that's the big key is keeping them all healthy. But I do think we got a great foundation for a team that could win a championship, but we've got to add a couple more to it. You know, this will be a big recruiting year for us, and we're trying to get a little more size and everything. So, but I really like this team. You know, I like these kids, and I like the potential that they have. Reminds me a lot of, you know, whenever you guys were so young, you know, probably your sophomore and junior year, the potential that the team had.
So, I mean, and we talked about leadership a little bit earlier. Given that you don't have any seniors, you will have to do a lot of grooming in terms of leadership. And because usually from team to team, leadership was passed down. Don Bradley passed it to me. I passed it to Charlotte and Stephanie. They passed it to Tracy Reed, and it went, you know, and it kept going. And so when we came in, we learned what your expectations were in terms of leadership. But with this group, there's no seniors to pass the torch. So it seems like you will have to do a lot more hands-on work with grooming them to become great leaders with this team. Because the athleticism is clearly there, you know.
It is. And we have no real established starters back. You know, Tierra Ruffin Pratt graduated and is playing extremely well for Washington, the Mystics with Ivory Latta, you know, and then Watea, and she's getting ready to go overseas to play. And then Krista Gross, and Krista Gross is also playing overseas. So we had three great seniors last year that we had tremendous leadership. That's why we were 29-7 last year and had such a great year, was because of our leadership. You know, so there's a lot of question marks, but, you know, our leadership may come from, you know, freshmen and sophomores. Delina McDaniel was Rookie of the Year last year in the ACC, you know, and so – those freshmen are good, and they're going to be fighting, you know, for starting spots in the play. So, I really have, you know, last year I could have said, well, these will be, you know, at least three or four of our stars. But now I can't say that, except maybe Zelina, you know, because she was Rookie of the Year last year. But, you know, it's pretty much wide open. But I like it.
Right.
You know, we're starting anew with a lot of good kids, and they're energetic and athletic. So, but I haven't been able to spend as much time with them as I want to. You know, the recruiting rules have all changed, and so now we're out a lot more and making home visits with juniors and everything like that. So, you know, you can't be two places at one time. You know,
right.
So, you know, you got to, you know, we've only got 3 weeks that we can go out, so I haven't. But thank goodness, you know, and that's why I think every head coach should have a great associate head coach like Coach Collard. I mean, you know, I mean, I could not exist without him. He's like my brother. He is the greatest thing that ever happened to me in my coaching career, you know, in basketball. And he's so loyal, and he's so good. He's just a great X and O guy. you know, he's not crazy about traveling and recruiting and all that stuff, but they're working with the players and teaching and fundamentals and film work and scouting and all that. They don't get any better, you know.
Right.
So thank goodness he's there working on fundamentals, doing all that stuff while I'm out recruiting.
Right. Now, you talked a little bit about how the rules are changing. I believe that there's a major shift happening in women's basketball right now. And so with all the rule changes and teams switching conferences and more conference games added to the schedule, what do you think it's going to take to grow the sport of women's basketball? And I think it's in a fragile state right now. What do you think it's going to take to really grow the sport?
Sylvia, you're exactly right, without a doubt. It is, we're at a time where we need to do some things to make the game better, to enhance the game and make the game better. And I think it's really, you know, Val just did the white report and everything, and she had like 15 or 16 things right there, you know, that now that we need to look at with women's basketball and all. Some of it was attendance, you know, the skill level, the coaching level, the ratings, TV ratings, you know, it just goes on and on and on with a lot of stuff. But it's real, and you know, I'm a real simple person, and I've been doing this a long time, and it's real, real simple. It's exactly what David Stern did about probably about 4 years ago to the NBA, where they cleaned the game up. Once they cleaned the game up, I'm not criticizing officials. I'm just saying we need to tighten the rules down and implement how we're officiating the game. And again, like I said, I've got lots of referees that are friends. I think they do a great job. They do what they're told to do. But I think mm-hmm. that we need to put the hammer down like David Stern did, and let's clean the game up a little bit. You know, now, at the beginning, you know, you call in a zillion fouls and all that, the coaches are going to complain, but you know what, we'll adjust to it. But David did this a few years ago, and whenever they cleaned up the NBA, made it much less physical, then all of a sudden, this would happen in women's basketball, if we did this, all of a sudden the scores go up. Because, Sylvia, right now the scores are the lowest they've ever been in the history of the game in men and women's basketball, both.
Wow.
Both games. You know, so if we cleaned the game up and made it less physical and all, then the scores would go up, you know, and if the scores go up, then the TV ratings will go up, more people will be in the stands, and all of a sudden skill level is so much better because the players are able to show their skills and abilities because it's not, you know, it's not so physical out there, you know.
Right.
And so
and
then
not
all
only
of a sudden,
did David Stern clean up the officiating, but he cleaned up where he started making players dress up for games, so they cleaned,
oh, yeah.
they tried to clean up the image after all of the brawl
mm-hmm.
fights that broke out. So, I mean, I think that has something to do with it as well.
Oh, yeah. I was just on a conference call a few weeks ago about the image right now of women's basketball. And, you know, they talked about the uniforms, how long they were and this, that, and the other. And I said, well, look, I said, I go to a lot of WNBA games. You know, I said, now, the WNBA, they don't have those long shorts and their uniforms look nice. I said, let's just adopt whatever policy the WNBA has, you know, for the image and how they look and different things like that. You know, but I agree with you, the image is right now is not what it needs to be. You know, so, but you're right. We need to do what David did a few years ago because, you know, all of a sudden, you know, things change for the NBA. And that's, mm-hmm. I really do think that if we would protect the shooter more, not let so much physicality be in the post, especially on away from the ball, those type of things, if we cleaned it up, then all of a sudden it's not that the players don't have the skills, they're just not able to show those skills because they're just mm-hmm. bodies on them all the time, you know, and that type of thing. So you've hit on a pet peeve here of mine right now.
I know, I'm speaking your language right now.
yeah, you've hit on a pet peeve here because, you know, I mean, I do think that, you know, if we get the scores up and then you think, how do we get the scores up? Well, we clean it up and we you know, with rules and stuff, you know, hey, I'd be glad to do the 24-second shot clock because I think the more we go up and down the floor, the better it is. You know, it'd be fine with me if we widen the lane. You know, I like international rules, to be honest with you. And of course, hey, you were USA Basketball Player of the Year 1 year. I mean, you understand.
I like the wide lane.
That gives me room to work as a post player.
And you know, this was brought to my attention by Mike Krzyzewski, and Mike told me that we are the only country in the world that has different rules than international rules for every level. I'm talking about middle school, high school, college, whatever. You know, we're the only country in the world that has different rules besides international rules. Everybody else plays international rules for every age level. You know, so I didn't realize that until just a few months ago, and Mike brought that to my attention. Because I think she's trying to do something with on the men's side, you know, as far as this also.
Right. Well, Coach Hatcher, we are running out of time. I want to thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule. I know you're busy with your team, all the Hall of Fame festivities, not to mention all the interviews that you're doing. So I'm honored for the opportunity to interview you tonight. And I hope that you are taking this all in because you definitely deserve all that's coming your way. You have fought a lot of battles for Carolina women's basketball and for the betterment of women's basketball as a whole. And you said something earlier that your favorite quote is giver's gain. And the more you give, the more you receive. Well, I feel like you've planted countless seeds, and it's nice to just see you actually reap the harvest of all the seeds that you've planted over the years. And so I think when you look around and you see the new facility at Carmichael and your new offices and the 900-plus wins and the number one recruiting class and being inducted into the Hall of Fame, all of those things are simply the harvest of the seeds that you've planted over the years. And so I'm just honored to be a part of it. I thank you for being on the show. That's my time. You are listening to Time Out with Sylvia Crawley, and we ask that you would just have a blessed week.
Tell me what you want. Tell me what you see. Where you want to go. What you want to be. If you have a dream, you can make it there with a lot of work and a lot of prayer. If you take your time, gotta be precise. Gotta have a plan. Double check it twice. Wait. Hold up, slow down, give me advice. Someone's on before, maybe talk to them. Then after you do, go and talk to him. Great, it's gonna come, maybe not tonight. Take your time today, teach you something right.
Got a lot of friends, made a lot of ends. Twitter, you the trend, team of Bentley Benz. But you're moving kind of fast. Keep sweats, you gotta make it last. Live every day like it's your last. But don't forget to have a blast.